Welcome to the Industrial IoT Spotlight, your number one spot for insight from industrial IoT thought leaders who are transforming businesses today, with your host, Eric Walenza.
Welcome back to the Industrial IoT Spotlight podcast. I'm your host, Eric Walenza, CEO of IoT1, the consultancy that helps companies create value from data to accelerate growth. And our guest today is Jason Shepherd, VP of Ecosystem at Zdata. Zdata provides edge virtualization to deliver visibility, control, and protection for distributed edge gateways, applications, and networks at the enterprise edge as a cloud-based service. In this talk, we discussed the state of maturity of IoT, cloud computing, and edge computing today. And we also explored how edge computing is inherently enabled by cloud computing. After all, without the cloud, the edge is simply an on-premise computer. If you find these conversations valuable, please leave us a comment and a five-star review. And if you'd like to share your company's story or recommend a speaker, please email us at team@iot1.com. Finally, if you have an IoT research, strategy, or training initiative that you'd like to discuss, you can email me directly at erik.walenza@iot1.com. Thank you. Jason, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
And yeah, we were just chatting, so it's probably been 3.5 years or so since we last spoke, which I think might have also been hosting you on the podcast. Maybe we touch base after that. But great to reconnect now, and glad to see you're doing well, and you're with a new and a very interesting company.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, really, like, nothing's happened in the past 3.5 years, right? Like, it's been pretty quiet, you know, overall. But no, yeah, times have changed, and I came to Zdata from Dell Technologies November of 2019. So it's been a really good ride, and definitely enjoying it. And times are good.
Yeah, auspicious timing, right? So, I mean, I guess every company has a different story for how COVID impacted them, but was there a significant impact on the trajectory of the data's business based on COVID? And
I mean, let's face it. So digital in general was the winner in COVID. You know, unfortunately, you know, kind of the digital divide expanded, but we, you know, doing what we do, it's really about remote orchestration for edge computing. And of course, we'll talk about that a bit more. It's, we saw most opportunities, you know, at least kind of maintain course, if not accelerate, you know, given the need to be able to manage things in the physical world, but do it from remote locations and the like. So, you know, overall, we did not see a massive impact on our particular business. It was interesting for me too, because I just joined 6 months before it all, the bottom dropped out. And, you know, I'd known our CEO and a number of the founders for a while and targeted Zdata to come over. But even though I knew people, it's always kind of weird starting in a new company remote. And then once COVID hit, like, everybody's remote. And I'm like, see how it feels? Like, we're on a level playing field. And so it brought us closer together, you know, in general, I think quicker. And, but yeah, it's been good. It's obviously, it's not without its challenges, but overall we fared pretty well.
Glad to hear it. Yeah, I mean, it is. There's always winners in a catastrophe, right? And certainly digital was the one here. Well, let's talk a little bit about the broader trends before we deep dive here, because certainly one of them has been people figuring out how to do a lot more things remotely. So that's had a big impact on digital. There's been a number of other things that have been moving in one way or another over the past couple of years. So if you just take a 10,000 foot perspective, what do you see as the big trends that are impacting either IoT solution development or adoption today?
There's all the buzzwords of certainly IoT, 5G, AI, digital twin, you know, so there's a bunch of different things happening across these technologies. But I think from a macro standpoint, you know, what we've seen in IoT, and talk about this in the past, I've been working in these areas with the industry for a while, is, you know, IoT, you know, rewind to about 8 years ago, 7, 8 years ago, when the buzz really kicked off in the 2015 timeframe. That was like the days where everyone's building a platform and it's like, well, buy my platform. What am I supposed to do with it? I don't know, just buy my platform. And so it was really, the challenges were all about use cases. The challenges were about people. different stakeholders, you know, people that are, you know, it's the not my job that scares me. I don't want to be, you know, found out of some efficiency or whatnot. I don't have the skills. Like those are the challenges have been the challenges with IoT. And given all of that, the last thing the world needs is another IoT platform. There's just way too many. And so what we had figured, you know, back then was that the market's going to go vertical before it goes horizontal. It's going to be about domain knowledge and people that deliver outcomes, not about the underlying technology or the fact that you're the 100th platform this week. And we would see a transition from all of these individual platforms to people using more common infrastructure. And then you wrap necessarily unique hardware, software, services, domain expertise, et cetera, around the wheel. And that's definitely been happening. If you look at like the industrial players early on in this wave, everyone was building their own platforms and trying to, even build data centers, and just all of this stuff. And now you're seeing a lot of those efforts sort of collapsing into, I'm just going to use the infrastructure from the cloud scalers and build my things around it. The macro trend for, I think, IoT has been people figuring out where does it make sense? Where is it kind of a neat science project? We've seen a lot of transition from in the industrial space, especially the mindset of I need to own the platform to own my customers to I need to, it's all about services and people that deliver the best services are the ones that are going to win, not the folks that are locking in. So there's just a big transition happening in the market, I think, in general, whether it's IoT or otherwise. It's more and more about how you deliver services to people, less and less about the widgets.
Interesting perspective. I remember back in early 2019, I think we did a benchmarking for a client of IoT platforms here in China, and every state-owned enterprise was building a platform. So all these companies that didn't didn't really have any technical background in terms of IT and so forth, and their platforms were, pretty terrible on par, but they were all building them because everybody kind of, like you said, felt like they had to have them. This is an interesting point around domain expertise, because from that standpoint, they actually, they actually do have a, maybe they were 3 or 4 years too early, right? Like now, if they're building this on top of other infrastructure, their access to customers and the, their understanding of regulations and use cases, is actually useful for delivering good services. How do you see this today? Do you see a lot of what we call end users now trying to leverage the access to these infrastructure solutions to build kind of new revenue lines on top of their legacy businesses? Or is that a trend that you're seeing in the market today, or less so?
No, definitely. I mean, everybody's, as we like to say, is kind of trying to SaaSify their businesses and be able to deliver new types of services in a subscription model or an OPEX model. Obviously, this notion of data monetization is growing, and it's definitely going to be less and less about reinventing the infrastructure and more about leveraging good tools so that you can accelerate on the how you deliver solutions to your customers. Compared to early on in the IoT days, it was, as we're saying, it just everybody. I mean, I can't tell you when I was at Dell Technologies, CTO for Edge and IoT, and how many times I had calls with people. They're like, "Oh, I'm so differentiated. I can collect data and put it into a dashboard and normalize it and do it AI," which really was just fancy rules engines. And it was like, okay, I've heard that before. It was the people that we had success with were really, really focused on one use case, that cold chain logistics or kind of retail optimization XYZ or some sort of manufacturing use case around quality. They're the ones that got traction, and it was not because they built a bespoke platform. It was because of their knowledge. And so that's where it's tricky though too, because as you go into a new market in a tech with a tech trend, it is still really about relationships. So in these types of markets, the incumbents have the relationships, but rarely do the incumbents drive the tech trend, the new transition to the new way of doing things. So all the challengers have the new technology. There's all these startups that are doing all this stuff, but they don't necessarily have the relationships and the channels, the longstanding relationships with the manufacturing experts within some company. And this would be like the industrials, like a ABB or Rockwell or Emerson, or from a process standpoint. Meanwhile, on the challenger side, they have all these new technologies and are really nimble, it used to be that the industrial players, or just anybody, any incumbent, would buy up a startup when it was threatening their way of life. But with so much innovation happening now, and all of the open source happening, and the this notion of the Kickstarters of the world, there's so much innovation that there's not enough money in the world to buy up everybody. So either you change or you're going to have trouble. And so that's one of the big factors that's changing how people do things, and this acceleration towards services and winning by merit, not lock-in, because someone else is going to do it without a lock-in strategy and beat you by how quickly and effectively they deliver new services.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting point. We do a lot of work in the innovation space, and often helping companies develop digital solutions on top of their kind of their legacy businesses. And you often have the chance to compare. You have some company that's building a particular SaaS application, edge application, whatever that is, and they're getting, they get $500,000 in seed funding and a couple headcount to scale this up. And then they have to pretty quickly start generating revenue and then try to be profitable and have a particular margin so that they could justify additional investment. And then you have some startup that's just raised, a $20 million, B round and scales up to 100 people. And you're like, even thinking about, there's no way they're going to buy this company because it already has a $100 billion valuation. But even competing with them is a challenge, right? Because they just, they have different timelines for profitability and so forth. So it's a very different ecosystem than it was, even 5 years ago in the industrial space. I guess the consumer space has been a bit like this for a while now, but for industrial, this is a new trend.
For sure. In industrial, there's been a lot more inertia, as I would say, why do we have so many protocols? Because everybody created their own protocol to lock you into their control systems. But with the advent of OPCOA and MQTT, just both OT and IT protocols, all that's changing. I've said for a long time, you have to democratize the South, southbound traffic to monetize the North. And that's where the money is. And so, it's an interesting trend. And I think there's a lot of, bigger companies that are doing some really innovative stuff. So I don't want to make it complete polarization. But one example that sticks out in my mind is I met with a lot of customers of all types of shapes and sizes over the years. And one of the big payments processors was, we were talking about IoT strategy, with some of their executives, and they're like, man, because I knew this was going to come up. They're like, man, when Square came around, it just really hurt us. Very innovative way of accepting payments, great for small businesses, and kind of changing how people can drive business. And just so much impact. And we don't want another Square to happen. So we're trying to figure out, can we do something around IoT or whatnot? And I had planned this for the end of the call. We were wrapping up, and I'm like, hey guys, have you thought about when machines start making payments? And that kind of blew their minds. And I'm like, this is why I did say this, but this is why Square is going to happen again. You got to be thinking outside your normal kind of wheelhouse. It's the old innovator's dilemma, but there's so many different areas that, to innovate, and you just have to sometimes get out of your own way.
Yeah, that's right. And certainly these large corporates, they do have a lot of smart, innovative people, and they have a lot of capabilities. So they just don't have the kind of the financial firepower, that they used to have, or the advantage there, right? So now the private capital is in the VCs and the PE hands. I think this example that you just raised around kind of machine to machine payment or machine transactions is an interesting one. Maybe we can get into a bit of the at least one of the drivers there, which would be edge, and then we could connect that to a couple other concepts. So, edge versus cloud, and then maybe also what is the role of 5G in that dynamic, because that then kind of connects edge and cloud in an interesting way. How are you seeing this kind of this dynamic between edge computing, cloud computing, and 5G as an accelerator here playing out right now?
So, clearly, as we see more and more data on networks, IoT wasn't the big bang as many predicted, but it is definitely happening out there. And we're seeing, actually, a lot of people don't want to share their successes when it comes to IoT because they feel like it's competitive advantage. But for a variety of reasons, the advent of more and more machine learning and to some degree AI and all that, like driving more data, this is what's driving this edge trend. Is not the best idea to just pump all of your data mindlessly to the cloud. That was like a big trend. But why was cloud initially a trend, you know, starting about 15 years ago? This migration, it's driven by the easy button. You know, I can, you know, it's nice to centralize services and not, you know, it's OPEX and I don't, you know, have to worry about all these big capital investments. And, you know, I just think about it as a resource. I don't care, you know, what it looks like. It's just a resource to me. You know, I don't care if the server is a rectangle or a circle or whatever. It's just, it's a resource. And so, you know, there's been a big trend towards, you know, cloud adoption, you know, for these reasons and more. But cloud and the easy button sounds great until you get the bill. The whole strategy is make it really inexpensive and easy to get data in and very expensive to keep it there and get it out. And so that's part of the reason why we're seeing this not shift. The cloud's definitely not going to go away, but you're going to see more and more pre-processing of data at the edge and this notion of decoupling your data from any given cloud, you know, as part of a multi-cloud strategy, so that you're in control of all the paths from your edges, you know, kind of where your data is coming up to the cloud. So it's kind of this, it'll be a symbiotic relationship. There's a lot of clickbait, you know, edge is going to kill the cloud. It's like, no, the cloud will still be very relevant. The edge computing inherently has the cloud involved in some way, you know, in the way we define it today. If you don't have this relationship to the cloud in some form, whether training, you know, models, you know, AI models in the cloud using kind of the unquote unlimited resources there, and then you're deploying inferencing models at the edge to pre-process data, or you're doing some pre-processing locally, and then you're going to do more processing of a subset of the data in the cloud, you know, et cetera. If you're not doing that, you're doing legacy on-prem computing. Those are just on-prem apps. So edge computing, the key difference is, because a lot of people, I've been doing edge computing forever. Well, the difference is that it's got this sort of symbiotic relationship with the cloud. It's a continuum from constrained devices, field, you know, a lot of, you know, like I say, some sort of sensor, smart light bulb, thermostat, whatever, up to regional data centers just south of the internet exchange. So you know, the edge. And where you place compute, like workloads along that continuum, is going to depend on a balance of performance and cost and latency needs and safety, security concerns and things like that. And this is also why it's so complex, why it's really important to have more consistent infrastructure and interoperability of where you kind of move these composable workloads. So then you can apply, as we were talking about, services and you know, kind of necessarily unique stuff around the wheel. So it's going to be this continuum, and there's different trade-offs, and we can kind of talk about some of those as we go. And Zedita's focus on a particular part of the stack. And the balance we'll kind of see play out over time. And then you mentioned 5G. So when 5G comes in, I've had a lot of folks, you know, over the years say, well, 5G is so fast, it's going to get rid of edge computing. This is a temporary trend. But what people don't realize often is that 5G, while really high bandwidth and low latency, it's hyper local. So I have like a super fast connection to a 5G cell, whether it's on-prem, like in a private 5G sensor or nearby, but then I still have the same slow pipe upstream. So it drives more need for edge in terms of pre-processing data locally in that very fast, you know, local connection. And then you pump, you know, less data, you know, upstream for further processing. And even if you can move data, it's expensive to move data. It will always be expensive to move data. And when there's more and more data and you get the bill, then, you know, edge starts looking really attractive.
That's an interesting point around the role of 5G or the potential impact. I mean, we're also starting to see, I don't know how much you're actually seeing this in the field now, but at least business cases around, you know, 5G hubs, you know, for smart cities, so serving the neighborhood, or for manufacturing campuses, but some kind of hub that basically is a data center in a container, something like this, right? Or a small building and servicing an area, and you basically have, with that 5G connection, the same kind of latency as if or similar latency to if the compute was done directly on the device. But then you have enough compute power in that container to do some pretty sophisticated work. But maybe you can break down, I mean, you mentioned already that the edge is kind of a continuum, but maybe you can break that down in a little bit more detail. How would you think about what are the different points on the edge from the device down to the gateway and then maybe up to that regional data center? And are you seeing particular trends right now about architectures that, you know, are there like a few different recipes of architecture that are typically applied? Because obviously there's a lot of room for creativity here. What are the most common cases that you're seeing today?
A good resource. So we, at Zedita, we had worked a lot with the LF Edge community, part of Linux Foundation, to drive a taxonomy paper. We're working on it fresh now, but this came out in like, you know, around in 2020. And we broke Edge down, you know, the continuum down into buckets based on inherent technical trade-offs. And then this also kind of leads into the architecture. A lot of are confused on Edge because, you know, people are like, oh, that's kind of one thing. No, it's a variety of different things with inherent trade-offs. Terminology like thin and thick and near and far, and, you know, they're all loaded terms. Even like the word tiny, you know, data center person says, oh, the footprint's tiny and it's like 64 gigabytes. And then someone building a constrained sensor is like, oh, it's 100 kilobytes. That's tiny to me. It's just completely different scales. So what we, this taxonomy, what we've broken it down as is you've got two big buckets. There's the service provider edge, which you're upstream of a wide area network. Because it's wide area, you're delivering services, your connectivity or computer, whatever, to lots of users or devices. And, you know, this would regional data centers, you know, like an Equinix or, you know, some of the CDN networks or things like that, or metro data centers in the sense of like the container you mentioned, where I'm consolidating services. I've got, you know, 5G, you know, connections out to, you know, folks. One trend there, though, just, you know, I think it's important to note is that with the advent of private 5G, the way the technologies have been consolidating, I mean, it's not to say that there isn't a lot of domain expertise with the telcos, and there is a question around spectrum, but 5G is as much about business model transition as it is about the technology. There are going to be new types of players offering these, you know, these networks and these compute cells, as you mentioned. And so the game is changing. When you're not trying to do like wide public areas like a telco where you have to have that infrastructure and all of the spectrum relationships and all that, things change. You know, you look at it as kind of like a Wi-Fi replacement. So there's the service provider edge, the big bucket, and then downstream, like on the on-prem side, you know, we called it the user edge. This is where devices and people, you know, are, and you know, consumers of data and producers of data. There is bleed between the service provider edge and the user edge when it comes to like CPE equipment. You say I'm a telco or, you know, some service provider and I'm putting equipment on-prem. But in general, it's these two buckets. So that's one inherent technical consideration is if I am latency sensitive in a use case, like delivering streaming video, and I want to do it to a lot of people, I want to do it at the service provider edge, you know, upstream of the wide area network. If I'm latency critical, like my airbag, you know, stopping some sort of machinery from hurting somebody, I am always going to do it on-prem. Even if that 5G connection or whatever is so fast, you just can't risk that. So that's one thing, latency critical versus latency sensitive. Another one is along the continuum, regional data centers, access, you know, data centers, that container that, you know, we were talking about, they are all physically secure. You can define a network perimeter, you know, as needed from a security standpoint. You can assume pretty much constant connection to that, you know, infrastructure from wherever your remote control is. When you get onto the distributed edges, like kind of on-prem, you have to assume someone can walk up and touch that compute. Someone can start trying to hack away at it, you know, locally, and you're going to have to assume that you're going to lose connectivity to the back end. So that second inflection point is it a physically secured data center or is it out in the wild? And then the last inflection point along the continuum, you know, from regional data centers, you know, as an edge down to constrained devices is, can the hardware support cloud native principles? This notion of abstracting the hardware, you know, containers, virtualization, so I can do continuous delivery of software to that box and, you know, kind of software defined in a modular fashion, you know, as part of my architecture. Can that box support it and it's driven by memory and to some degree, you know, CPU? Or is it so constrained that you have to do embedded code? And that's another inherent technical trade-off. So, you know, like a gateway box, a hub router, server, you know, doesn't matter, call it an edge node. It's around 512, 256 megs of memory that is the floor to run containers and, you know, virtual machines and things like that. And we'll talk about that when we get into what we do at Zedita. But below that, you have to go embedded. And so now all of your updates are kind of monolithic over the air updates and, you know, versus I can, you know, software defined and add modules. I'm going to put in a new, you know, AI module. I'm going to add the security function. You know, they're more like apps. The whole goal of that, of Edge from an architecture standpoint is take the lessons we've learned in the cloud, all the benefits, you know, easy button, you know, managed services, you just give me outcomes, make it easy to continuously innovate, do it as a SaaS, extend the benefits of the cloud as far down the continuum until it just breaks. And that's at that point where a box runs out of resources. By doing that, now I have the ability to you know, do it as a, you know, as SaaS, you know, all the benefits. But so architecturally, it's really important to be looking at various levels of abstraction. So you abstract the applications from the underlying infrastructure, decouple your edges from any given cloud so you're not hard tied in. You do not want to be locked into one cloud. Make sure you have focus on domain knowledge that kind of wraps around the core infrastructure versus trying to reinvent the wheel. And then architecturally, it's really about applying those cloud native principles, which is, you know, things like platform abstraction, containerization, continuous delivery of software. And that all plays back into this notion of someone's going to be out innovating you and delivering things faster and more efficiently. And so you need an architect to be able to compete.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think that's really useful background for thinking through what does the edge mean for different people in different scenarios. I think when we get into Zedita, we can also get a bit more focus on, you know, where you participate there and maybe dive into a case to also make it a bit more concrete from that perspective. But before we do that, just one more question I wanted to cover more on the trend side, which is this topic of ecosystem. So, you know, of course, you're the VP of ecosystem at Zedita. And I think this is a title that 20 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, didn't really exist. And now it is, you know, it's fairly common to see some kind of senior executive have an ecosystem management role. So why is it that ecosystems are becoming increasingly important for technology companies today?
It really comes down to, yeah, so the big difference, I mean, way back, it would be like the channel partner person. You know, the old way to do this stuff was build a product and then figure out how to partner to sell more of it. The new way of doing it is architect an ecosystem into your product to create a network effect. You know, this is, of course, we see this with app stores, with phones and stuff like that. The ecosystems, you know, the old way was create a lock-in play ecosystem that everyone has to code to your standard. The new way is create open standards, and then you just need to be fast at staying ahead. You know, rising tide all boats, but your boat floats the quickest. And, you know, ecosystem doesn't just mean business partnerships. It also means things around, you know, industry consortia and kind of building the network effect in all fronts. But it really is about, you know, how do you drive a network effect across broader landscape of people? How do you share investment to consolidate the areas that don't matter as much? You know, we've been talking about, you know, it is not as important to own the plumbing these days. It's how you wrap it all up into an outcome. These are the reasons why, you know, ecosystem is so important right now. And the longer term potential is this idea of various different systems. I mean, ecosystem in general, it's just like in the natural world, they hit equilibrium. There's different motivations and reasons why things happen. And the longer term potential is all these different quote unquote ecosystems, not only from a technology standpoint, but from your verticals, like retail crossover into the home, or how different supply chains interact, or just like the whole notion of public services crossing into the private space. You know, it's all about balance between driving new value and new experiences while maintaining appropriate privacy or protecting, you know, IP, things like that. That balance is what we're always going to be looking to find, but there's just so much innovation that's possible when you start thinking about how all these things start relating. And so it's much more than just core business partnerships. It's really about driving new types of, you know, new money, new experiences around connecting all the dots that we've been building kind of in isolation for a long time. And so, yeah, it's much broader than, hey, do you want to help me sell my stuff?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting analogy back to kind of the animal kingdom ecosystems, right? So you do have, you know, these different ecosystems, tundra, forest, you know, desert, et cetera, that are to an extent self-supporting, you know, and they're competing for territory. And in the same way, you have here groups of companies that are also self-supporting and competing for territory. So it's, you know, to some extent, it's not so much which company has the best technology, but it's which company is part of the, you know, the best ecosystem, the winning ecosystem and has a key role there.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like the old VHS beta example. You know, if the listener's old enough to have had video cassettes or know this, is Betamax was a superior technology, but VHS won because they went out and got the studio support. They were part of the ecosystem. Same thing with like LoRa, with from an IoT standpoint, is they built a really great ecosystem. And you know, we've seen Sigfox has now gone bankrupt because he was kind of more of a lock-in thing. And just with any ecosystem, as you know, we were saying, in the natural world, a new player comes in and changes how things are done, and everything rebalances. We've seen this in the past with like your rideshare platforms, or like the any of the social stuff, or you know, your Airbnbs or whatever. And so those things are going to happen faster and faster. And so it's going to continuously need to rebalance.
Okay, great. Well, let's now focus on Zedita. Maybe we can start with the value proposition. I mean, I guess we've already been talking around edge, so that gives us a lot of the background here. But let's say the first words on your website: visibility, control, and security for the distributed edge. So maybe you can just break that down. What value are you bringing to the ecosystem, to your customers?
Yeah. So, I mean, the easiest way to look at us is, you know, if you think of data center technologies, like, you really good tech that's kind of focused on more centralized data centers, to some degree bleeding into, you know, what we do is, you know, Nutanix, VMware, the Red Hats of the world. We're taking those principles and extending them further out into the field. So, you know, I mentioned that the continuum, once you get from the fringes of the data center, where a lot of those solutions, you know, are very, very relevant, you get out of the fringes of the data center, you know, into kind of more distributed locations, all the way down to that last point where you just can't run, you know, containerization, virtualization, et cetera, anymore. You have to go embedded. That's the spectrum we cover. So one box with enough memory to run EOS, which is, you know, our variant of Linux that we leverage for our cloud controller. It could be one box all the way up into clusters of servers, like right bleeding into the data center where all the other traditional tools would take over. The difference is that when you get out of the data center, as I was saying before, you have to assume someone can walk up and touch the box. You do not have the luxury of physical security. You don't have necessarily a network perimeter. Zedita, basically, start by saying what we sell is Zed Cloud. It's our subscription-based console that is a customer, you would go in, and this is where you'd see your fleet of edge devices. You get the health of the infrastructure. We have an app marketplace that allows you to kind of curate the applications that you want to distribute out. And effectively, it feels a lot like the public cloud, but we're extending it out to that point where it just breaks. Whether you're using a gateway, hub, router, cluster of servers, you know, whatever, we provide, you know, zero touch provisioning, you know, really easy to get going. I don't need IT centric skills to do it out in the field, because you have a very broad mix of skills. You choose the hardware you want and the applications, and the data goes wherever you want. We're purely about infrastructure. And then we have a security model that, you know, again, assumes that the box is physically accessible. So very deep security model down to silicon. I can expand on that in a bit, but in a way, just think of us as like a VMware Lite. You know, we're a lot more complementary, you know, to those solutions than, you know, might appear on the surface level, because the operating model is flipped. People are approaching edge in kind of two trajectories. One is sort of like, if you talk about distributed edge, this notion of a box that can run, you know, composable apps up to the fringes of the data center. People are approaching that from kind of like the IoT world, OT, you know, the operations world up. Adding, you know, initially maybe I was just doing some basic scraping of data, you know, as an overlay. I'm maybe pumping it to the cloud. I'm just trying to modernize my infrastructure, attach, you know, a gateway to some PLCs to get data out, and maybe start applying analytics. That trajectory, as customers come to us, they're thinking kind of more device management, you know, simple, just brute force updates. So that's kind of the OT up, and we become very, very relevant when you start to realize you need to run more applications locally, and you need to build in that resilience and architect for the modularity and abstract yourself from any given cloud, all the things we've been talking about. The other side of people approaching kind of from the cloud down, you know, I call that IT down. So this is like, take IT principles and extend them further out into the wild. Take all the stuff we've learned in the cloud and extend it out, and all those benefits. And that's where we help from the IT side. And so we see customers coming at us from both directions. Our differentiation is in the fact that we can help both sides, as, you know, IT and OT sort of start to converge in the middle. We're we're different in the fact that we can run virtual machines and containers. A lot of the device management platforms out there that have started to add container support, by not supporting virtual machines, they can't support legacy applications. And let's face it, there's a lot of legacy out there, things running Windows, or even if it's like a single Linux image, you can't just drop everything and modernize, change everything to containers, you know, overnight. So the other big one is our security story. There are other platforms out there do, you know, device management or edge orchestration, as we would say, but they have like virtually no security story. For us, it's the two components. There's our cloud that we monetize, and then we leverage EVOS, which is this variant of Linux with embedded hypervisor and all kinds of new curation. Think of it as like Android of the edge. We built this operating system, we put it into Linux Foundation, so it's open. You know, this is all goes back to all the things we've been talking around. You know, it's better to democratize the base, and then we build services around it. EVOS runs on edge hardware, and then we communicate with that through ZCloud. It's an open API. I mean, anyone could use EVOS, but we built the cloud. It's not like it's easy to do, but we think it's important to be open. EVOS is what enables the security model. So some competitors are like, oh, my security have got role-based access control and, you know, on the back end and TLS communication to the device. Well, good luck with that. For us, it's, you know, with EVOS, it's root of trust to silicon. When it boots up, it connects to the controller, to ZCloud. It creates a crypto-based ID for that box. So now you have no username and password locally, which is one of the threat vectors. Like people coming up, logging in and just start sideloading software in it. You have to go through the backend console. You log in the backend console and now you're authenticated and everything's logged what you're doing. Measured boot, remote attestations, you know that the box is what it's, you know, says it is, and the software is checked out, all the certificates match. Distributed firewall where you can guarantee where data is flowing. You can assign apps to individual resources on the box, like compute, storage, networking, very similar to how you would do it in the cloud. You can shut off ports individually, remotely, and all these different layers. I mean, a lot of detail behind it, but very much the things you would expect in the data center as an IT professional, but extended out to the point it just breaks. And the fact that it's open on top of it, and we've been building an open ecosystem around it, and these are kind of the differentiating points.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah, I think the VMware light is a great analogy here. Who would be the typical customers? Are you selling to direct to enterprises in the CIO office, or are you selling to solution providers that are then building on top of your infrastructure?
I mean, just like with anything in a lot of these technologies, it's the big air quote, it depends. But our focus is very much, it's a blend, but it's very much the majority right now is OEMs. And when it comes to the market, there's kind of look at a matrix. There's kind of the IT down trajectory. There's the OT up trajectory. And then you've got OEMs, end users, and then there's kind of an extra category of just developers, you know, that are kind of just building software and kind of innovating and whatnot. But so if it's an IT down play, you're typically, of course, selling to the IT organization. If it's like a more of a bigger new thing, it's the C-suite, CIO, and stuff like that. By aligning with some of these other players in the industry, you know, like a VMware is like an incumbent, of course, and you've been so dominant in the data center for a long time. And, you know, as more and more people kind of realize that we're a natural extension of all the great things that those companies do, it's more of an education thing. Sometimes, you know, we have customers from the IT side that are like, well, I'm a VMware shopper, I use Red Hat, and so I need to use it everywhere. And then it's just an education that once you get out of the data center, the tools need to be different, similar in principle, but different tools. So we're selling to kind of the IT folks, you know, coming down on that front. And that also tends to be more, you know, there's kind of the industrial world where IT and OT are trying to, you know, kind of work together a bit more. And then there's things like retail, healthcare, financial services, where they tend to be kind of more IT-led solutions anyway. So that's kind of one trajectory. And when it comes to OEMs, that would be like working with, you know, one of the big hardware OEMs or some of these, you know, software infrastructure providers. We are working on selling, kind of getting embedded in there, like white labeling and those types of players. And then we're also selling, you know, direct to end users. On the OT side, so kind of coming up, same thing. This is where, you know, we're working on, you know, embedding our technology as, you know, this horizontal enabling technology, you know, from an orchestration and security standpoint for distributed edge into their offers. And this kind of goes back to that, you know, all of this goes back to that, you know, saying like the incumbents have the relationships and the technology, whereas the challengers have, or the relationships and the footprint and the channels and all that, and the challengers have the latest and greatest technologies. So by embedding ourselves into, you know, and working and, you know, partnering with these different OEMs that have the base, it's kind of like it's a win-win for both of us. So we sell on the OT side to machine builders. I can give you an example of that, as well as big solution OEMs. So folks that have a little bit of everything, software, services, hardware, you know, the big industrial controls players and you know, a variety of folks. In those scenarios, those customers, as an OEM customer, they handle the OT IT thing because they have those relationships. And we, of course, you know, help by joining forces and, you know, it's kind of bridging across the aisle, so to speak. When it comes to direct to end user, which is, you know, maybe it's a portion of our business, direct to end user, we go in and as a small company, we're the ones addressing kind of IT OT. And who do you sell to? It completely depends on the use case. It depends on the organization. Are you selling more to the IT admin or, you know, the OT network admin, the production supervisor? We navigate that. And this stuff kind of plays off of each other because as we build more OEM relationships on the OT side, then we're actually starting to go together into these customers. We're like, oh, you're a longstanding, you know, customer of, you know, industrial player X. We're working with them, and then everybody's happy because you connect the dots between the relationships and the technology. So there is a variety, but if you slice it up between, you know, kind of IT down and OT up and OEM and direct to direct, it's kind of the vectors that we consider, but overall, much more focused on kind of the OEM trajectory is how can we enable people that have the domain expertise, have the footprint to accelerate, you know, which ties back to everything we've been talking about, you know, today is just be really good at one thing. In our case, it's about that fundamental infrastructure. We do not do applications. We're not trying to be in your data path. Just do it really well. And then enable other people to deliver those services.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, why don't we dive into one of these OEM cases then, and we can look at, you know, what does this look from a what was their challenge, what was the solution, and then how are you working together today? Which case would be a good one to dive into?
Yeah, we can talk a bit about Bob's. That's one of our public case studies, and just, you know, there's a bunch of different things you know, we could get into. I know we're coming up on time, but. So Bob's is a machine builder. I mean, broadly speaking, solution OEM, but they build these huge packaging machines to make cartons and labels and the like. And they had adopted Azure IoT. This is a very common pattern for our customers. So Azure IoT, you know, they're doing all kinds of cool stuff. And there's Azure IoT Edge. Microsoft clearly has a big footprint in the manufacturing space. You know, just coming from, you know, the embedded Windows world and, you know, longstanding. Azure IoT Edge is kind of like, as the edge component, Azure connected Azure IoT Edge, there's, once Azure IoT Edge is out there, then they can do all kinds of stuff in terms of managing modules within that runtime, that, you know, that kind of blob, so to speak. But getting Azure IoT Edge onto a box and managing the box itself is actually quite hard without us. You know, we've done a direct integration with Azure IoT. We make it a couple clicks of buttons, then you can also manage the infrastructure and the like. So Bob's, like a number of our customers, found us through the Azure IoT marketplace. They had already adopted Azure IoT, but realized, hey, this is really tricky to scale because I'm talking tens of thousands of machines over time. So they came to us, and we were in production in like 5 weeks with them. This is the beauty of SaaS, is once you know there's a use case and you've got a definite problem to solve, we can spin up quite quickly. And so they're leveraging us to manage the compute inside of these big, you know, packaging machines, deploy their baseline applications. They're, you know, like, just like we've been talking about, they've got this whole initiative to drive more, you know, connected services to their customers. You know, to some degree, it's just, you know, making sure they're happy in general, but also I can monetize new services. This is an overall trend that we're seeing across the market, and we're providing an engine to enable you to scale that. And it helps that it's, you know, rooted in SaaS. You know, we were in a webinar with Microsoft and them a little while ago. And first off, the Microsoft rep was like, yeah, use it either. It's painful to deploy Azure IoT Edge without them. And the second off, the tech lead from Bob's was like, we had a problem at just 10 machines trying to manage this stuff out in the field in terms of scaling. And, you know, this is a very common, you know, thing for a lot of folks. So we see use cases like that. kind of more constrained to a connected machine, you know, that you're trying to deploy intelligence to. We do a lot in, you know, manufacturing, oil and gas, renewable energy, especially because utilities tend to be freaky about anything attached to the cloud, even though we're not in the data path, so the data can stay on-prem. But, you know, so we see those kind of industrial use cases. We have a large, one of the world's largest oil and gas service providers that are consolidating their kind of legacy SCADA software on in these trucks out in the oil field alongside kind of more modern software for network function virtualization. And we're, again, that engine for that. We've worked with big manufacturers to deploy compute on their factory floor where the OT group wants to do, get data out of their PLCs or, you know, the process infrastructure. And the IT group says, nope, you're not putting that on my network. And because the way we've architected for security and we kind of sit right in that convergence point between OT and IT, you know, we went through a big audit and were able to get in on that one. That was a major manufacturer. So we see these, you know, different patterns. Because we support legacy apps, there's a lot of customers coming to us just because, like, we can help them modernize their existing infrastructure. And then they can lift and shift current applications, get that remote management, you know, new levels of security. And then as they innovate with new kind of containerized, more cloud-native technologies, they just keep going. And so that's the value prop. And in long term for Edge, the killer app is computer vision. I mean, anything associated with video data is you want to process locally. It's the only people that think sending raw video streams over the internet is a good idea are people that sell you internet. Yes, so we see the gamut, and it's just it's a mix of all of the above. But one last thing, I know we've got to wrap up, is that's the OT side. The IT side, we see this just this trend of I'm going to help you extend the principles, you know, as we've been talking about, from the data center out. You need to increasingly run compute on-prem, or maybe you've all these years you've had nothing. I'm in like a small retail store and I deploy a box, say for like video surveillance, I turn it on, press record and leave, and I never see the box again. Might as well put it on a milk carton, you know, like, have you seen me? We can provide at the right price point, you know, access and remote management and all that to those systems. So just the better mousetrap for, you know, IT modernization is a whole other trend, completely unrelated to, you know, the industrial side. So, you know, we see the gamut.
Great. Well, it sounds like you've got a great, great niche, and you're you know, right in the trend here. So you're in the right position at the right time. We do have to probably wrap up now. I know you're just starting your day, but if folks want to learn more, I'm sure you have some webinars. What's the best way for them to learn more, and then the best way for them to get in touch with the team?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the easiest way is, you know, send an email to info@zavita.com. Obviously, there's our website, you know, out there. We do a number of webinars. We have our annual event, Zavita Transform, that we do in the August timeframe. We have a lot of really good speakers, that, you know, especially for a smaller company. We get a lot of industry leaders that come and speak at that. We do a recurring Transform Digest series, you know, in terms of webinars. You know, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or whatever. But yeah, info@zavita.com is a good way if you're interested in learning more and potentially talking about collaboration opportunities.
Great. Well, Jason, thanks again for coming on. Great to catch up.
Great talking with you again. And yeah, have a good one.
Thanks for tuning into another edition of the IoT Spotlight podcast. If you find these conversations valuable, please leave us a comment and a 5-star review. And if you'd like to share your company's story or recommend a speaker, please email us at team@iot1.com. Finally, if you have an IoT research, strategy, or training initiative that you would like to discuss, you can email me directly at erik.walenza@iot1.com. Thank you.